Hey, welcome to Playing Conversations. On this episode, we talk with Julianne Quay, founder of V-Files, director and co-owner of Barnsley Football Club, partner at Alternative Press, and she also teaches the energy of creativity at Roc Nation School of Music, Sports, and Entertainment. Hope you enjoy our conversation.
So where is everybody?
So we're in Melbourne. As you know,
what? What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. We live right next door to Anne.
But why are you in? It's like what? What time is it?
5:15.
This is quite normal
guys,
for us.
Guys, come on.
We usually just get on and just talk about what we did on the weekend and stuff.
And then come up with some sort of plan for the week.
Yeah, yeah, some sort of plan.
So yeah, we're in Melbourne. Jason?
Yep. I'm in just north of Portland, Oregon, Ridgefield, Washington, in our little team studio here. And Matt is down in Portland.
Yeah, I'm in like the heart of Portland.
Wow.
And
nice.
I'm
in New York. We have a little place up here. It's like an hour out of New York City. So tend to be here on Mondays, and then all the rest of the days I'm in the city.
Very cool.
So this is when I do my actual meetings. No one can come and talk to me.
Sounds similar to our week. We kick off Mondays quite luxuriously. It's kind of like our Sunday because the teams, you know, because most of our work is US based, we get a chance to kind of potter around and plan the week out.
Yes, the Aussie Monday. When I'm at home, Monday in Australia is the best day because it's Sunday in America. And nothing is happening.
And everyone here hates it, but we love it.
Yeah, I know, right? I love it too.
So where do we begin? Anything you want to know before we get too much into the weeds?
I think it's better to not know. I actually don't know anything.
Nice.
I didn't know anything about, really. I mean, I went on your website and it's like, whoa, these guys are totally on the functional design, which is the hardest thing to do.
It's kind of like, I mean, in my perspective of things, you guys are like the kind of insider designers that shape the world as we see it without knowing that people were hired to do that. Design of things that are day-to-day items or things that you come, you know, across as part of your normal travels, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The people who design those things are like the creme de la creme.
Wow. You're making my head grow by the minute. You're making us all. Matt's grinning, and that's a big thing for Matt.
No, but why I understand you. I see you guys.
Thank you.
I'm in the, you know, obviously in the young creator space, in the fashion space, and our design is very much instant. It's either on a trend or it's, you know, it's like, this is our voice. This is how we always speak, like in terms of V-Files, but we don't do things like design a tap. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's a big deal to me. And that's like only the big guys get to do that.
Oh, wow. Well, so I had a similar observation of your work the other day. And Karen was looking, she brought up something online. It was a virtual...
The runway.
Our fashion show on the runway?
Yeah.
And I stopped and thought for a second. And I'm like, wow, we could never get away with something like this because the thing about fashion is... Your job is to provoke. I think it was it's provocative and it's all embracing, right? So there's nothing off limits. Whereas with the kind of work that we put out into the world, there's boundaries that we need to set up. And we're like, oh, we could never do that because it's got to live in the market for a decade or more. And we couldn't get too wild with color and because it's not going to sell. And so we have to really walk this narrow line of what's going to be tasteful, what's going to be commercial, what's going to serve its purpose. So I think both worlds complement each other in some way.
I mean, yes, 100%. And I always think about fashion and, you know, it's like the temperature of the time, right? It's like a barometer. You know, when I started V-Files in 2012, the fashion climate and what was happening then is very different to what is happening now. You know, I love time capsules and things like that. And I love like decades and I do believe that things are cyclical. I always look at it as like, you know, like you say in Melbourne, right? We're Australian, we're from Melbourne, and like Australia's four seasons in a day, right? a lot of people don't understand what the different seasons are. And like people, I think, have forgotten what spring is and what autumn is and, you know, all that kind of thing. And so fashion is like, even if you took the four seasons, fashion is like the temperature of the cultural mindset at that moment, right? So you're going to see, I think, in America right now, like with all of the stuff that's happening with Trump and blah, 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 there's going to be a big kind of goth punk resurgence. And it's already starting. The scene in like Brooklyn and in, like you always look at the, what the kids are doing and it's very goth. I don't think it's a direct response to anything like particular, like, okay, we don't like this rule, so we're going to do this. It's more, again, it's a temperature of the time right now. I'm in New York City. V-Files is based in New York City. It's expensive for young creatives to live in New York City. It's tough. You know, we have to get on the subway. The subway's dirty. We can't afford all this. We can't do that. And what that means is that it sends creatives into groups to work together in a different way than if, like, okay, money's flowing and, you know, pre-COVID, everybody had moved to LA, right? And then, like, COVID happened and more kids moved to LA. LA is a different, it's very like you guys who are in America, you see, like, an LA kid's reaction to adversity is very different to a New York City kid's reaction, because adversity in a big city that doesn't have access to the beach, it's a very different thing. And so when we talk about fashion design, it's always a reflection. And, you know, that's why, like, when you do see fashion exhibitions, like fashion art, it doesn't make any sense, because you have a lot of fashion students, and I'm sure you have this in the design thing as well, you're reviewing their portfolio, okay, and they say, okay, this is my look. This is inspired by new growth and whatever. And the look is like basically an actual tree, right? So it's a branch on someone's head. And then the branch is wrapped around the body and the model is literally wearing like a nude, like unitard thing covered in sticks. You're like, okay, I can see that. But like, look out the window. Do you think those people down there are going to wear that? Can you sell 10,000 units of that design to keep you in business? You have all these different tiers in fashion and design. And that's why your tier where you guys live is kind of the masons of design, right? You have to crack the code of so many different user groups. And so for that, like, I have so much respect for that.
Yeah. I liked your... That was a really cool observation about like punk maybe the next thing. And, you know, when the way Brendan was talking about it, you know, we have these things to hold to, but it's the constraints that we problem solve within. And I think for us, it's often the journey is to create something lasting that is also, you know, in some ways a response to the trends of the time, but also needs to last past that as things evolve. It's really interesting thinking about like the response to what is the constraints right now of like, how do I express myself? How do I dress myself walking around New York to say something to provoke, if that is really the constraints, and is that that's the problem solving? It seems like that would likely be the next cycle to come through, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I think like for me, that's why design, you know, I'm just going to make notes here. That's why design is all about good design and good brands. And my thing is like, I love brands, right? I'm all about brands. It's an energy. So if you look at V-Files and things that we've done over the years, everything has the same energy. And that you can't design energy. You either have it or you don't. Chanel is one of my favorite brands. Chanel, no matter who runs it, obviously, you know, Miss Karl Lagerfeld and they keep, you know, new designers, et cetera, et cetera. But Chanel is just fashion. You go to their, you know, a Chanel show, there's like the models are like model, and you're like Gigi, Bella, Kendall, and you're like every model is coming down and you're like, oh my God, and more. And in the end it becomes, it's not like you're not stuck on the design of every look, like the jacket, the button, like, you know, whoa, the skirts were short. Like you don't even care because you are just so mesmerized by the rhythm of what's happening.
The theater.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, when you talk about fashion, fashion is theater. You know, it is, it's what you wear to the theater as well as theater. You know, I do a lot of work now in football and, you know, I'm the co-owner of an English football club. I'm also on the academic board of the FIFA Diploma in Club Management, through which I get to meet so many incredible football executives and players. And it's the same thing with them. There's like a timeless energy, and the energy that they have, that they bring to a conversation, is more impactful than anything else, you know? And so you think about, you know, if we're talking about design, like design is the ability to harness an energy for a relevant moment or use.
Yeah, energy's it's like when you mentioned the punk movement, that's like the scene that I grew up in when I was growing up in Southern California. So that's something that's near and dear to me. And it's really cool to see how, you know, our generation took it and did one thing with it. And there is fashion elements involved into it, and seeing how another generation's taking it and running with it. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with just the overall like open-mindedness in that scene and the willingness to allow people to be expressive and kind of like the, you know, the fuck you kind of attitude, excuse my language. But it's also just like, there's always been a really strong DIY aspect to it. And it's been something that's been incredibly accessible. And it's cool to see where people are taking it now, because design tools and information is so much more accessible to young designers. And they're doing things like making music that sounds like it's from either the late 90s or early mid 2000s. And is so much better than the music was then, because they understand how to write better music because they're more exposed to things early on. So it's cool to see like this massive progression in that scene, especially with like...
And also the technology, the technical tools they have. Yeah, no, I love that. I saw, you know, on my Instagram feed showed up during the weekend, Mark Ronson was DJing at a couple of parties, and that he was DJing vinyl. And it's hard, right? It's not like a CDJ where you go boop, 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 boop. You know, you slide the things up and down, fade in, fade out. I mean, when you're trying to DJ with vinyl, that's a real skill, you know? And it was so interesting because the kids in the V-Files community, and I always talk about them as kids because they're, you know, if I give an age group, it's probably like 16 to like 25, 26. They're not really big on social media anymore. They, it's analog, you know, and,
oh, yeah.
And there's much more skills and much more respect for skills. Like one of the guys comes in and, you know, he's borderline concert pianist and he plays the piano and he's like, you know, do you mind if I, like we have a piano in our store, and he's like, oh, do you mind if I play loud? And like, and it is full on, you know, we call it heavy metal piano. I mean, he's just playing classical music at full volume with incredible energy. And, you know, when I started V-Files, I never would see that. That would never have happened. It's much more, you know, hey, here's my track. Can you listen to my track? Or I'm going to rap over this track, you know? And then, you know, going back to the punk and the goth thing, you know, I have some really dear friends who were in a band, came up about in the 2000s. And, you know, they tell me stories of how they used to, you know, work stocking shelves, and then they would put their amps on dollies, and then they'd have to wheel them from home to their, wherever they were playing. You know, they didn't have a van or anything. They have to walk with everything. And so you see, and they're very successful guys now, and you see this, that whole return to that. And I think one thing you see in like on the West Coast is like, you know, the same, that whole return to, I'm going to do my music video in a swimming pool, you know?
Yeah,
have you seen all of that coming back?
Oh, yeah. We went to one, actually. Karen and I went to one. We met a guy that when we were living in West Hollywood, a really nice guy, but he was like one of these guys that's doing like eight different things. And one of the things he was doing during the day was he was a music producer, and he invited us to this recording. I'll never forget.
I felt like we were on Entourage. There was like people in bikinis all around. And
that sounds fun though. It's like such a community thing. I mean, I love that. I love that whole thing. I was like, okay. I mean, I grew up on, my main fashion background is like all the years I really spent with Steven Meisel. And so there's like nothing that surprised me on set at all.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
What I found interesting there is like, you know, there's so many new tools, but I think daily culture is changing. So even though we have the accessibility of all these tools, it's like that desire to go back to analog to kind of shock people or have them, you know, be different in a way, looking back to the past and looking at the tools that were used. How do you take what's available now and, you know, really break through the noise? And I did a little bit of research on you just to kind of keep this thing pointed in the right direction. But I loved a lot of the stuff that I've read about your driving personal brands and how, you know, important that is today. How do you educate some of these like young talents on how to manage themselves, how to manage their creativity, like where to put it and where the most effect is possible for, you know, building their own brand nowadays?
I mean, I think like there's so many, you know, apps, like you can be how to build your Instagram profile, how to have a better TikTok, like how to get more followers, how to set up your feed, blah, blah, blah. The thing that is the hardest that no one ever talks about because you can't teach it is how to be authentically yourself. The ones I've seen through the whole V-Files journey, it's more like, you know what? Believe in what you do. Keep trying things. I remember like I teach this class at the Rock Nation School of, you know, Music, Sport and Entertainment. I've been teaching for a couple of semesters. I took a break this semester. It's called The Energy of Creativity. The whole thing is that most young creatives are just scared of failing, right? No matter what you define failure is. And it's like really no one's really watching you.
Mm.
You know, the only person watching you is yourself right now. So it really doesn't matter. And so we had this class, I taught this class on failure. When you stand in front of, you know, a group of college age students, most of the time there's like a phone or there's a head down or there's like a snack, you know what I mean? But when I talked about failure, every eyeball was just bam, you know? And I think the whole thing is, you know, we always talk about, you know, that whole analogy with Michael Jordan, right? Or LeBron, like LeBron just made how many baskets did he, 50,000 or something baskets has he scored recently? Like this is, you'll have to fact check this, right? But in order for him to get 10,000 points, statistically, he probably has to miss 100,000 times, right? And so when you start to put data around failure, then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, in order for me to succeed, I have to throw this many things out statistically so one of them's going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Once someone realizes that, I've got to start throwing things out there, then all of a sudden they don't have time to be like, oh, well, what should my attitude be here? What should this be? What should that be? Things start to stick and they start to identify like, oh, wow, this stuff is what my audience wants. This is, you know, my brand. And then once you know that, then you have to work out how to make that kind of notion talk to multiple people. I'm full of quotes, but one of my favorite ones is like, you can't mean everything to everybody. What you want to do is you want to mean something to somebody. And it's the something to somebody that makes you successful. So if you try and take an idea, filter it so it hits all these different people, the chance is that idea won't be the one you wanted and it won't get through because it won't be clear. Whereas if you take and have an idea you really, really believe in and you find people who believe in it, then they end up like, it's like the ripple in the pond, you know, they end up going out from there. So those are my brand teachings, really. It's like, you've got to be authentic. You've got to find out what that authentic thing really is. And then you got to lean in on that.
When you were talking about like just the 1,000 throws or the, you know, the 100 shots before they miss, it's pretty much when you don't think about it, that's when you start to find yourself. And that's where you start to find, oh, that's my strong suit. That's what speaks about me. And then you start to establish a brand that comes out of that without even sort of worrying about the external factors that are sort of pushing it, like, oh, so-and-so is doing this, or this is the trend right now. It's like, no, this is what's working for me because I have no, like you said, no time to think about it. And then people start to latch on and it starts to grow and expand and evolve. And your whole, what you thought you never had, it's sort of blossoming like a flower.
Mm. Right, it's the energy.
Yeah.
It's the energy.
It's the energy. It's the energy of doing it.
And it's industry agnostic or it's expertise agnostic. So Jason will talk about it at Art Center. Maybe Jason, you can say it, but how many hours of sketching you need to do before you're an automotive designer?
I started as a kid. Yeah.
Wow.
They always talk about, you know, the difference between you in high school and a professional designer is mileage. It's like physical miles. Your pen needs to travel on paper to teach your shoulder, teach your arm exactly how to put what's in your head on a piece of paper and allow yourself to explore.
Wow.
Yeah, that's so, yeah, it takes time.
Wow. That's so I went incredible.
To 9 years of college. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, they have a thing too in equestrian, like one of my neighbors actually is a world champion show jumper, and they have, I don't even know the number, but he says something like, in order to get to X level, you need to do 5,000 trips around a course. And because, and you can't do that on one horse because the horse won't be able to, you know, survive that. So you, that's why you need multiple horses. That's really interesting. So let's talk about car design. I love that. I think car design is incredible because it's the same thing. I've got to have wheels. I have to be able to steer. It has to take this, you know, petrol or electricity or whatever. It's like, well, what are the variables? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a huge skill. Wow.
Yeah. It's, I'm really interested to see where things go from here. There's been a lot of innovation in the way things are constructed in vehicles that have like the behind the scenes stuff that nobody knows, but has changed the efficiency of putting a vehicle together. Yeah, I mean, just to go back into my background, I met Brendan and Karen working for them as an intern for 9 months at Boeing and the Teague
design studio. I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah. And that's really what kind of like
crazy.
Yeah, framed up my brain. You want a really cool design challenge. It's, as we always kind of put it, everything on an aircraft needs to trade its way on by weight. So it has to have some benefit that offsets the weight of another thing on the aircraft.
Yeah, I can give you an example. The thing, I'm going to step up and be a Boeing champion for a second.
They need it right now.
They put the passenger first well above and beyond the competition. I'm not going to say who the competition are. We all know. They take a weight hit for windows on the plane. So they put more windows in the plane. They put bigger windows in the plane so that people in cattle can at least see the outside when they're traveling. On the 787, they worked with Disney to design the front end of the plane to make it look to give it more character.
And is that why they call it a Dreamliner?
Dreamliner's got a whole, I don't know, marketing tends to come up with these fluffy, they had this whole cloud-like interior that they, there's a lot of reasons that it's called Dreamliner. But they definitely put passengers first. So,
wow, that's so interesting because, you know, I do a lot of traveling and I have to say the Emirates and Air Qatar, like they're incredible.
Yeah.
And of course, my favorite in the whole world is Qantas, right?
Yeah.
But you like, you sit there and then, and you like, I was thinking this the other day, I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, who decided that that button would go there? And what is this little gap here supposed to mean? It would be really cool if there was not, you know, the how they have the photo thing of like, this is your emergency exits and blah, blah. What if they did one and it was like, this is what goes in all the spots. This table falls out, then you can do this, then this flips back. So you can put your phone there and then this like, you know, and then the weird things where you hang your headphones and where are the cords? But I am like, that's such incredible. Wow. That's a real skill. I love that. And cars and like the trucks. One of you guys was designing a truck, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did I see Jason, that somewhere?
I think that's, that's the first project that Matt and Jason worked on together last
crazy.
Year.
Yeah.
That was a fun project. Yeah. We got to do like a crazy trade show build for that too. We had a 20-foot tall by 40-foot wide screen. So we could
take
the truck and put it in different environments and use that as their keynote stage and stuff. It was a lot of fun.
You know, I visited somebody and they had a car collection and they were like, this is my Rolls Royce and this is this. And I'm like, okay, great, cool, whatever. And then they're like, oh, but I think you're like this. And they pull up a screen and a garage door and there's like three monster trucks in there.
Oh.
And I was like, this is, now this is impressive.
Different. Yeah, yeah.
But like these were, you know, like two stories tall. Again, like, you know, I love design and things and I love passion. I love people that are passionate about things and it doesn't matter what it is. If you went all in, that's what matters, you know? Mm. And like these trucks were just the craziest thing. So when I saw that, like I'd go on your website and I saw those trucks, I'm like, bloody hell, that's crazy. Cool. I mean, how do you even get booked to do that?
Yeah.
Like, how do you guys get jobs? Like, what's your workflow?
Well,
like,
Jason, maybe Jason. Jason can tell you how we landed that one.
Yeah, and then... I would bet it's similar to this kind of like the continuous energy and keep doing your thing. So a couple of those are a result of like my past experience leading to the relationship that moved somewhere else and then called on me to do something we'd done similar with a different set of circumstances and constraints. So after leaving Boeing, I ended up at Tesla. So I was on the design team that was there for kind of the design phase of the Model 3. Ended up at Adidas, which is where I met Matt in innovation. And then I went to Freightliner and I did electric semi trucks. So there's a lot of connectivity through all those, but continuing to move on to the next opportunity has always allowed me to take what I've learned here, move on to the next thing. And when a new set of challenges comes up, that one kind of landed in our lap, but it needed a huge brand component that we hadn't really done at that scale. So that's where I called Matt. And he, you know, art directed all of the digital content that lived on that board. We, you know, designed the vehicle to shine in those moments and to, you know, communicate the brand in those environments. Yeah, it's really about just kind of, you know, continuing on creating, I think, on our journey, and the next thing shows up magically. Yeah.
It's a lot also with the people that you sort of work with over the years, the network, and it's like your network is your net worth.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's funny. Design's one of those things that you can get the sort of, if you sort of cold call or the occasional cold call or people reach out. But most of the time it's like who you know and your reputation. And it's really about like, especially for young people, like you don't know where your friendships or your connections or your sort of colleagues at school or, you know, your first job go to. It's it's really that.
I mean, look at this conversation. I mean, you guys are like next door neighbors with my cousin.
I know, Anne. You know? We love Anne.
I mean, like, that's just the funniest thing ever. Like when Anne emailed me about it and she WhatsApped, I was like, what? And then I was like, sure, okay. I mean, like, I would talk to anyone she suggested I talk to. And I mean, it's exactly that. But Matt, tell me, so Matt, you're at Adidas. So what were you there doing? Adidas Originals, Adidas, like what innovations at Adidas were going on when you were there?
So I worked in global brand design. So I kind of worked on everything. I was specifically on the identity team. So we were doing logos for different footwear, setting brand standards for the brand. So how the logos showed up. I actually had a really cool opportunity. I got to design the new Adidas Performance logo. So if you see the new Adidas Performance logo, there's no word mark below it. And that needed a lot of work because when you took the word mark off, the balance of that whole thing just kind of went out the window.
Yeah.
So it was funny. It was like one of the most high stakes projects because it had so much stuff involved, but it was like the easiest project I ever did. It was the fastest one that went through approval just because taking that, putting a good story behind it, getting the proportions right. It was just like, cool. It was like approved almost instantly. And that was really cool. And then I got to rework the Originals mark too at one point. Just touched a little bit of everything.
Pretty crazy.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing. Did you work with some of the partnership brands like Alex Wang, and isn't Stella McCartney was there, and did you do all that too?
I didn't get to do those projects. Those projects were really embedded within the Originals department, and they kept a pretty tight core team on that just because it was working with kind of like high stakes or prestigious person on the outside. And I think they wanted to really control those conversations to make sure the relationship was good and not get too many people involved. Cause those ones were cool because they definitely kind of came in, like pushed the limits and always had somebody in legal freaking out because the logo that they wanted to use on it wasn't the right one or the proportion or something, which went against some copyright thing, but it always came out to be something really cool. And those are definitely the products that are having kind of like a lasting impression.
Matt, you also worked on athlete brands, right?
Yeah, so we like did a lot Willard of personal athlete Harden, brands.
All that kind of stuff too.
So which ones?
A lot of those were the other guys on our teams. I worked more on technology stuff, but the team that I worked on did the James Harden mark. James Harden was kind of like the biggest one because the team worked on his identity. And then we had another team within our same department that did all of the creative direction behind it. And the Harden Volume 1 was a really, really innovative and cool campaign.
Mm. But if we go into functional design with sneakers, right? So like you have, like what is, if you had to say, what is the core design difference between an
an Adidas shoe and a Nike one.
Adi shoes tend to have, at least when I was there, they tend to be a little bit more triangular shaped. And Nikes tend to be like have more of like a rounder toe box, and Adidas tends to have like a nice, like more of like a automotive styling to it in a sense.
Yeah.
They went way heavy. Adidas went way heavier into knits and how like the knit technology was working, and like Boost was a big thing when I was there. So that's kind of like the kind of the main difference. And some people argue quality was with better with one brand or another.
That's really interesting. So yeah. Triangle versus like a round. Well, it would make sense because the Nike founder, I mean, was all about the waffles on the sole of feet, you know,
yeah.
So that would make sense for the rounded toe. But then functionally, as a functional designer, which what's better, the triangle or the round?
New Balance. For your-
And what shape, what's their shape?
I think New Balance is kind of like more in the space of Nike where it's a bit more rounder,
but not
I'm like,
as
I'm
round.
A big yeah. runner, so, and I only run in New Balances. Yeah. And like, yeah. I love, like, to me, like the 574 is one of the best casual sneakers
yeah.
ever. And
yeah.
New Balance has one of the best gray color palettes of all time. Like
yeah.
it can work with everything.
Yeah.
I think New Balance is more, it's a very specific shoe, right? Like New Balance works for somebody that has a wider foot. And then Adidas or Nike tends to have multiple shoes that fit kind of multiple niches, right? So there's kind of get watered down a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
They have really great footwear. Obviously, like the Nike Vaporfly is like, I've ran marathons in that shoe, and that shoe is unbelievable. I think just New Balance to me is just a cooler brand. The smaller brands to me are doing the cooler stuff right now. I think that's kind of what you're seeing. Like the bigger brands are actually losing a ton of market share to like the Ons and the Hokas and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because they're newer brands. They have, I think, better stories to tell that are coming across mm-hmm. as being a little bit more authentic. And
yeah.
they're doing all of these really cool grassroots movements that's really igniting and energizing that space.
Yeah.
So it's yeah. been fun to see that progression, especially coming from the big brand and seeing how they're noticing it, wanting to adapt to that, but then how the smaller ones are just authentically taking that and running with it.
Yeah,
I like
think
what you just said.
Adidas, back when we were there, in comparison to Nike, it always felt like this kind of scrappy scramble to pull together new technologies and stories. And sometimes those would get hooked onto like a James Harden shoe for a campaign, and it wouldn't
yeah.
always be fully orchestrated. Whereas Nike's a little more methodical about their range mm-hmm. planning and their allocation of technologies. And I mean, they're where they are because of that. And Adidas has, you know, it ebbs and flows in the market. But I think, yeah, what we've really seen in recent years is a lot of talent has left both of those places and gone to those smaller smaller brands. And, you know, when three really talented designers come to a new place and have, you know, bring all of their experience and finally are unleashed to come together and point, you know, their energy in one place, you see how, you know, a brand like On can really grow and create, you know, their brand awareness and product understanding in the market. And I know. I think that's not slowing down right now.
Yeah. But it all comes back to storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and who can do it better.
Yeah, definitely.
That's definitely what we're about. And you mentioned the truck, and that was the first project Matt came on board with Planco for, I think, wasn't it? We
yeah,
had
yeah
Dave
that was
as
the first
well.
One.
Yeah. A lot of small agencies of our size, you get told to niche, right? To find your niche and go deep. Agencies often take that as, well, I'm an industrial designer, so I'm going to build an industrial design team. Or I'm a branding person, so I'm going to build a branding team. And I think when we met Matt and we sort of organically connect with other creatives, we were like, we want to be able to do it all. We want to be able to tell good stories. That's what we want our niche to be. So I think that's the storytelling thing is critical. It's universal, be it in fashion, product design.
Yeah, I think it really just comes from just creating the space to allow general just curiosity to grow. It's kind of interesting to see that like all of your background as well, because it's not in one direction,
yeah.
right? I think there's threads between everything with like, you know, I think football and fashion are kind of, they have huge intersections. But it's just like, what has made your kind of curiosity grow and get into all these new and different spaces?
I'm just a fan of things, you know? I like watching people, I like watching things like this. There's pretty much nothing you could put in front of me on the television or that I can't watch. You can look at things in so many ways, right? My curiosity is like, if I,
if I see, say you're watching a super crazy violent show where everyone's heads are getting blown off and like Saw, instead of watching that part of it, you're like, oh my God, how did they shoot that? Was that this? And then it, and then all of a sudden you're not even watching the story anymore. I'm just curious. There's just ways of looking at everything. One of the best things is like when you watch a football game, like a soccer game, it depending on who you're sitting with, there's a big realization as an individual, you realize that there's all these people here and none of us is seeing it the same way.
Mm.
Everyone is seeing it differently. And football is a great example because a simple way to look at it is you follow the ball. But then there's the analyst following the defense, right? Mm-hmm. So like watching, did they go in? Did they? And they're filming that. And then there's someone else doing the midfield and the attack. And like, and then there's the coach who's not even looking at the ball, really. The ball's like there, but they're looking at the structure and they're making patterns.
The strategy, yeah.
Yeah. And so they're literally making patterns on the field. So when I ask you about shoes and you, that's so interesting. So you say triangle and a round toe box, like, to me, it's like, wow, I've never looked at it like that. I'm going to look at that. And it's true because every Adidas pair of shoes I've had, and I used to be a big runner, my toenail, big toe fell off, right? My big toenail fell off because it was pinched into that.
Toe box, yeah.
And, you know, and then you look at the Hokas or whatever with the big heel. This made me feel really tall. But then when I'm running at them, I'm tilted so far forward that I can't get the length of my stride, right? And so I'm looking at it that way. Someone else is like, shoot, these make me feel really tall. Yeah. I love these. Yeah. I love the color. And so it's just like everyone sees everything differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
And part of being like a good designer or a good brand person is to have in that difference, there's something that's unifying. At V-Files, we can create, you know, a fashion show, a concert, merchandise, but the thing that will always connect it is opportunity and energy. This V-Files uniform we're about to drop, this is what you wear, you know, put this on, this is your cape. Mm-hmm. Like, put this on, go and do it. Or it identifies you as part of this group. Curiosity is just everything, you know? And unfortunately, most people aren't curious because they're not forced to be. And that's where the othering of creatives come in, because a lot of creatives grew up, we watch everything, which means we weren't the center of attention. You know what I mean? Because the center of attention isn't watching, they're being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of creatives are very much like, they're the observers.
Yeah, totally. When I was doing my research, I saw you were talking about like creating opportunity for younger designers. And that to me is like, that was something that really stuck with me because it's definitely one of the most valuable things you can do. And it's not something that surprisingly is like happens a lot, right? Because a younger designer comes in and they kind of are held to, oh, you're just doing lower tasks. Like you have to work your way up into it. But really giving a designer to not only have an opportunity, but also to have a chance to be vulnerable, to give a platform to make mistakes, like that's pretty rare at times. And creating a space for designers to do that's really amazing and eye-opening experience.
Thank you. But you know what's interesting about that? So I just want to say one thing. When people say creating opportunity, right? You know what's really interesting? Talent, kids don't want money.
Mm-hmm.
They want a platform. And they want someone to actually believe that their idea could go on the platform. And that's so like in terms of like philanthropy and nonprofit, if you throw out grants to a young designer, like say the young version of you, and you got like a $50,000 grant, right? When you're like 19, well, what do you do with it? I'm going to pay my rent. I'm going to maybe buy a more powerful computer, right? And you do all these things and all of a sudden, and that didn't help you at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It didn't help your brand grow at all. And so our thing is like to provide opportunity through a platform and then a mentorship thing. We're like, get it up there by this date. And sorry, Brendan, I interrupted you.
No, the moment's gone, but it wasn't a big one. It's just, I wanted to acknowledge that too and say that I feel that. So when Matt was saying he was doing some research and saw that you support young designers.
Scary.
Yeah. I feel it coming across, like you say, I'm just curious. And I mean, that's evident in you throwing the question back to us when this podcast should really be about you. We find ourselves, hang on, we've been talking for too long. But I think the overlap is really interesting. I think, you know, your observation on footwear design and cars and planes, it's fascinating. I think the overlap with footwear was particularly interesting for me because it's a lot like headphones. It's something that you wear. So there's personal preference goes a long way and personal geometry goes a long way. If I got a big flat foot, some shoes are just going to fit me better and I'm going to feel better in those.
Like one of my things I always ask and that drives my husband crazy, and I'm doing this thing right now. I think I'm going to start this thing called JAQ, Just Ask Questions, because ask the most stupid questions, right? Like, for example, you're being on the plane and like you look down at the wheels. Well, who decided that the middle of those wheels is like silver? Why aren't they colored? Why aren't they branded? Why aren't they painted? Like, who decided?
Because you're not flying on Virgin.
No, I know, but you know what I mean? And that's the answer. So it's a definite decision that someone made. It's always who decided that?
Well, and those questions, I'm not joking. Virgin was the first airline to brand the underside of the plane because they started to notice that people look up into the sky.
Yeah.
Richard Branson was like, I was a huge fan of his when I was younger. I was just like, this guy's just, he knows how to tell stories.
Create worlds. Like it's all about world building, you know, like people and like screenwriters and like, this guy's a world builder. He builds worlds, you know, that's what brands are. Like when you wear, you know, that brand, it's, you're in that world, you identify with the world. Like the Nike thing. And if you took the just out of the just do it, Nike's a whole different thing. I mean, I always just gravitate to originals and I don't, you know, really know what is Adidas? You know what I mean?
Always the best for the athlete, but originals is basically a historical, you know, gingerbread crumbs of that being put into practice in sport and standing the test of time and earning its spot in the historical record. And, you know, they reissue those things. Those were created around, you know, a technological advancement or a manufacturing advancement.
But,
and
you'll see they things never tell like Ultra that Boost. Story.
Yeah, yeah.
That story is missing. Yeah. I'm not getting that story. You know, you just made me like, oh, wow, shit. So those, like, because I have like the Samba, I have all of these, the shoes, and I'm a huge originals fan. But I didn't know that. Thank you, Jason.
So the things that are coming, I mean, that was the dream. I worked in innovation and that was, you know, the dream was to come up with something that gets attached to, you know, a technological advancement and those things when they solve something, create a cultural thing. And eventually it earns its spot in originals because it was a product of the time.
Wow, I never knew that. Hmm. Never, ever knew that. That's interesting.
Hey, Julianne, just off the back of that, I'm going to segue a little bit, but You champion young designers, and I'm not that young, but what would you say for a small company like Play & Co? What would you say? I mean, you're probably going to say, just keep doing what you're doing, guys. But
no, I'm not. You need to flex a little bit. You can't be subtle. Here's the thing. People say, like with athletes and everything, the most talented athlete is never the world champion. You know, and the most talented athlete often isn't the one with the biggest endorsements. And for you guys, you are, what a background, but you need to tell that. And it's very difficult for Australians. Mm. We really struggle at that. Mm. And we only, you know, just a segue, Jason and Matt, like we only do it. We only do it when we're forced to. Honestly, the work you have done is incredible. And I think that the way you approach things too is very thoughtful and mindful and then respective of other designers, right? And the thing is, like with V-Files, it's not a competition. And that's why like I live in America, because there is so many people here and there's such a huge audience that there's an audience for everyone. And I think like when it comes to agencies, I think it's very difficult because you always like you get identified by the work that you do. And like I saw this thing again popped up on my Instagram, and it was this kid had done all these AI ads for different fashion brands, and they were really, really great. But it immediately was like, yeah, so this kid ends up defining themselves through the brands they decide. And I think the hard thing with an agency is when you display like who you are and whatever, you're showing the work that you've done because you were hired to do that work. What would you do if you weren't hired to do it? Like, that's what you should be. This is what we would do. And we think this should be like this. And then you can totally be like, oh shit, if I put that up there, you know, someone's going to steal it. Good, try it.
Yeah.
Try steal that design. The other thing I always teach my the kids I work with them and my kids and all people that I work with is you can take everything. You can take my Rolodex. You can take my ideas. You can take my team. You can take my office. But without me, it won't be the same.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I am the magic.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Right? And you have to own that. You have to like, you have to know that. You guys on this call, like you're the magic. We sit here like, well, I just designed a truck. Yeah, well, you know what else did I design this? Oh, yeah, we just designed this thing, this plane. Oh, yeah, by the way, I did the headphones for Philips.
You're right. That's starting to sound very Australian.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, can I have 50 cents of chips too?
That was the best impression of Brendan I ever heard. So.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Then like, oh, yeah, I'll have some sauce with my pie. Thanks. Yeah. Come on. Are you kidding?
All right. We're going to do
that's
it.
What
noted.
You guys need to flex. You know what that saying, like there's I read this thing on this old magazine I found. Maybe it's a year old or 6 months old. I don't know. There's always magazines around our house. It was the monkey and the pedestal. Have you ever heard that analogy? So often you like talk to, and I'd never either, but it was so smart, right? So a challenge for a team is to put a monkey on a pedestal and have them read the alphabet. So what part of that challenge do you take on, right? And that identifies what kind of, you know, innovator you are. First of all, like if you're trying to make, is this a commercial project? So if it's a commercial project, like, okay, can I actually make a monkey read the alphabet? Because if I can't, this is never going to happen. But some people start thinking about, what pedestal would I make that a monkey would sit on? And so then they waste months. Guys, unless you're building a robot monkey, the monkey is not reading the alphabet. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, can you solve for that first? Or is there an audience for monkeys reading it?
Yeah. The least difficult part is to get them up on the pedestal in the end.
Least difficult part. You put them there and you tie them on a sled and you say, hey, stand there, whatever.
Yeah.
But so those are really interesting questions. And I think for you guys, you're just absolute. I'm like my mind is blown by the amount of work that you have done and the incredible thinking that you have. And then like, Jay, like how many times you, I can't even draw a car with the four wheels on it to get all the wheels in. You know what I mean? Like, what angle do I have to draw that from?
My desk just looks like, you know, there's just pages and pages of stuff that just falls out of me at this point.
It's a form of meditation for Jason.
But I bet you guys, two of those people who like take notes in all caps. You know, it's all caps, really small line. Exactly.
All right, here we go.
The lines are like this, and you're like, okay, wow.
Yeah. She's got me figured out.
I know what I'm talking to. Where's my notes look like that? Can you see that? Mine is just like, you can't even read that. I can't read
getting
it.
Getting shit done kind of note taker.
Yeah.
Getting shit done.
Like that.
But seriously, I would like, you guys are incredible.
I mean,
and the fact that you're globally spread out is also like outstanding.
Likewise. I mean, I think what you've built is phenomenal. And Julianne, this has been
amazing. Like really, really amazing.
Yeah. Well, you guys are amazing.
No, you are.
We should have another chat. I'll catch you. We have another one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Get some ideas together. I can find you some clients.
All right.
I like that.
Be careful what you say because we are the kind of Australians that kind of take people up on their offer. So no,
I'm not joking. I'm not joking.
That'd be amazing.
We would be internally grateful, and we would do our most insane work ever.
I know.
Like, Matt doesn't say much, but when we unleash him on a project.
I can tell. I see you, Matt. Okay. Well, lovely to meet you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Julianne. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Say hi to Anne.
I will.
We'll catch up with her for breakfast.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Amazing. Okay, bye.
Bye. See ya.